This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Good evening, and thank you for tuning in to Eco Radio. On tonight's program, Kansas Riverkeepers Laura Caldwell and some area youth will be talking about their water testing experience, and Don Bueller will be highlighting the Kansas Riverkeeper and their upcoming River Fun outings. But first, I'm Natural E with your headline news. HuffingtonPost.com reports, ExxonMobil is fighting a subpoena seeking its internal documents on climate change, arguing that the order violates the company's constitutional rights. It's an argument that legal experts say is unusual but not unprecedented. Earlier this month, U.S. Virgin Island Attorney General Claude Walker initiated an investigation into whether Exxon misled the public on climate science. His office is also requesting records from the Competitive Enterprise Institute, a Washington, D.C.-based libertarian think tank, to which Exxon has previously provided funding. In that subpoena, the AG's office accuses Exxon of defrauding the government and consumers and, quote, misrepresenting its knowledge of the likelihood that its products and activities have contributed and are contributing to climate change, end quote. But Exxon says Walker's attempts to get its documents is politically motivated and a violation of the company's rights. It has filed its own lawsuit in a Texas court to block the subpoena. Exxon's invocation of the First Amendment is fairly unusual for a business, according to John Coates, a professor of law and economics at Harvard Law School. The Supreme Court has ruled that corporations do have First Amendment rights, but they aren't necessarily as broad as those afforded to individuals. Reuters.com reports, Mitsubishi Motors Corporation admitted to manipulating test data to overstate the fuel economy of 625,000 cars sold in Japan, knocking its shares down more than 15% and wiping $1.2 billion off its market value on Wednesday. Mitsubishi Motors said the fuel economy levels of models made for the local market were up to a tenth lower than stated in tests results. It said it manipulated those levels to gain a favorable reading for its fuel economy certification. The company said that in calculating its car's fuel efficiency, it measured how much they slowed per second rather than the time it takes to slow by 10 kilometers per second or per hour, as required under Japanese regulations. It also manipulated the equipment used to measure a car's rolling distance during fuel economy tests and used a different testing system from other Japanese automakers. Japan's Transport Ministry ordered Mitsubishi Motors to submit a full report on the test manipulation within a week and said it would decide on its response to that report by May 18th. MidwestEnergyNews.com reports, a new life cycle analysis by the Great Plains Institute says yes, finding that electric vehicles emit 61% fewer greenhouse gases than gasoline-powered automobiles. An electric vehicle contributes 29 tons of greenhouse gas emissions, while a car using gasoline will release 75 tons over their respective lifetimes based on 160,000 miles of travel. The emissions go to near zero when electric car owners participate in renewable energy programs, the analysis said. At this time, I'd like to welcome Mr. Richard Mabian to the mic.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. This is Richard Mabian, your host of the most. And tonight, we have quite a show for you. I think I have totally outdone myself. Remember that group of young people I was telling you about that was in the process of learning how to scientifically test water? And then I told you that they took what they had learned and they came and taught my NAACP members how to scientifically test water. And then one of my NAACP members, along with the scientists that work for this organization, Friends of the Call, and some other volunteers that we had, went over to Argentine Middle School, and they taught the seventh graders how to do what it was they had learned. Well, guess what? I got them young people sitting in this studio, and it's a whole bunch of them. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to count to three, and I'm going to have everybody say hello. Here we go. One, two, three. Oh, man, that sounds just as shaggy as it could be. But anyhow, they're here. Now, what I'm going to do, we're going to attempt to do this, is I'm going to have each one of them introduce themselves, tell you their grade level, and what school they are from.
Hi, my name is Ibrahim. I'm a ninth grader that goes to J.C. Harmon.
Hi, I'm Natalie, and I'm a junior at J.C. Harmon High School.
Hello, my name is Irvin, and I'm a 10th grader in Wyandotte High School.
Hey, my name is Emmanuel. I go to J.C. Harmon. I'm a freshman.
Hi, my name is Kevin, and I'm a freshman at J.C. Harmon.
Hello, my name is Alicia. I am a sophomore at J.C. Harmon.
Hey, I'm Alfredo, and I'm a sophomore at Wyandotte High School.
Hi, my name's Felicity, and I'm in my sophomore year at J.C. Harmon High School.
Wow, boy, this is the most people I've ever been in here with. Mike, excuse me. You know Mike don't like you doing that kind of stuff. Well, gang, what we're going to do is talk about their experience. So because there's so many, we're in what we call tandems of two. So I have two up here with me. When you say something, answer a question, say your name, and then answer the question. What I want to know is, what did you think about this program?
I'm Natalie, and I really think it was an interesting program. When Friends of the Call came to us asking for students to help out, to hire, I really, like, was interested. I really wanted to learn about water and what was in it. So I really thought it was a really interesting program, and I really liked it.
My next question is, before this program, what had you done that you would consider to be scientific?
Well, I'm Ibrahim, and before this program, I did a lot of Boy Scout programs that was scientific. Like, we went out to trails and I don't know how to explain it, but we cleared most of the roots that were too thick.
So you did some of that outdoor education stuff, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you've had experience in being involved in some type of environmental activity.
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to ask both of y'all one more question. If you had to recommend someone to do what you've done, who would you recommend, Natalie?
I'd recommend, middle schoolers, high schoolers, because it's really such a fun program. I learned a lot, and students, that are interested and want to learn more, they'll find it here.
All right. Ibrahim, we're going to get more specific with you since you have that Boy Scout experience. What individual that you know that you would ask to join into this program? I want a name.
Alex White.
All right. That'll work. All right, gang, we're going to be switching chairs here. I'm bringing up my next two people. Thank you. You did good. In between them coming up, I should be having the folks who actually are running these programs. I got some adults in here. They don't let children around me by myself. So, you got to have adults around somewhere to kind of look out for you. All right, we got two more up here. And this one young man, I can't pronounce his name. I told him I was going to let him announce his own name. Tell me what was the first thing you did in this cat class.
My name is Emmanuel. The first thing I remember doing was, we started doing the tests and talking about what we was gonna do later on, and the schedules.
Okay. What school are you in?
Me?
No.
My name's Kevin. I'm in J.C. Harmon.
But you're J.C. Harmon. Okay.
Yes, sir.
On the first session that you went to the creek.
Yes, sir.
What did you think when you found out you had to walk out into the water?
Well, I mean, I'm more of a, outdoors person, so I really enjoyed going outside. It was a good experience, and I actually caught a really big crayfish.
Did you? What kind of shoes did you have on?
I had some, some sports type of shoes. I had some Reeboks.
Did they get wet? Good and wet?
Yes, sir.
Did it mess them up?
Yes, sir.
So, yeah, I got you. Okay, tell me something about the vertebrates. What kind did you find?
We found some like little snails and stuff, you know. We also found like a bunch of bacteria in there, and you know, they're like little green insects, but
okay.
I can't remember
that. That's all right. Well, you're getting closer. Can you add to it?
I know I didn't go, so.
You didn't go to that one. Of all the activities that you had, which one did you like the most?
I like to do the air and water temperature.
That's what I saw you doing with the NAACP people. Yeah. Yeah. So what did you like about that?
I liked it making people do hold it up in the air.
So what was there something about it that you found out that you didn't know before?
Well, I did find out how to measure air temperature. I didn't know how to do that.
Okay. All right, I'm going to switch people. Mr. Bennett, would you step to the phone there and say hello to them, let them know which one of these students you're working with? That one.
Hey, this is Dave Bennett, and I work at J.C. Harmon High School, and I work with all the Harmon kids, and I've also been working with kids from Wyandotte, too, with this program. I recruited some of the kids from Harmon. Great group of kids.
All right. We have two more students. Which schools are you from?
My name's Felicity, and I'm from J.C. Harmon High School.
My name's Alicia, and I'm from J.C. Harmon.
Look at all these J.C. Harmon folks up in here, you know? Okay, now I want to go with the air monitoring station first. I'm going to that particular activity that you had. There were a couple of things that they were asking you to discover. Which one of you remember what that was?
In which?
The air monitoring one, the one that my guy was talking about. The temperature was one, but there was something they was asking you to find out the difference between.
Well, we each specified, we had like a specific thing that we were supposed to learn about and teach other people, so we didn't always get to get the, you know, full experience of each test. So, Alicia, you did oxygen?
I did dissolved oxygen.
What is that? You got to tell us what it was, right?
Dissolved oxygen?
With that test? Oh, this
no, is another test. It was a different one.
Okay, tell us about it.
Well, what we did was we'd put in some dissolved oxygen packages into water, and we try to see the percentage of water in it. And in the end, we'd make the water this yellowish color, and we'd have to make it go clear back to its normal color. And depending on how many drops of this solution we'd have to put in it, was depending how much oxygen was in the water and if it was good to drink or if not.
That's probably the main test, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That's the one that people up in Flint wish they had that test. Coming back to my measuring deal, I thought it was something you had to find that dealt with acid or something like that in the water.
Acidity?
Yes. Now, see? I remember. What was that?
Well, there's a certain amount of acids and bases and like the, you know, level, the chemical level of, you know, how much, like she said, it is safe to drink. And so, obviously, you know, too much acid in the water is terrible, but it's, you know, just as bad if there's too much base, you know, base you find like, you know, in like bleach and stuff like that. So you don't want that in your water.
Okay. Now, are you all still having classes?
During school? Yeah.
No, I mean with this group, with this particular activity.
Yeah, we meet every Monday.
Okay.
So we go over what we learned. And.
Okay. That's good enough. It's time for me to switch over. Laura, come up and have a word while they're switching over.
My name is Laura Caldwell, and I'm the education director for Friends of the Call. I'm not the riverkeeper anymore. Our new riverkeeper's here tonight, so get to talk to her, Don Bueller. But it's been a pleasure to work with these students, and we're getting ready to have a big event on Saturday. It's going to be at Caw Point Park from 1 to 4, and it's called the Clean Water Green Earth Festival. So I hope you all can come.
All right. You took our thunder, but we'll be back to it. We on our way there. I want to know, this is Alfredo, right? The last class you were in Monday, what did you learn? See, I told you, you're going to be put on Front Street when you got out. Yo, yes, sir. Jump in there and get
Hello, my
hand. Hello,
my name is Irvin, and I'm from Wyandotte High School. The same with my friend. We're both yeah. sophomores.
Yes, sir.
So, yeah. And the last class we've had was actually around three weeks ago. We actually got a little bit busy, but the last thing we actually did was organize our event that we're going to have this Saturday. So we were just organizing everything, seeing how we're going to lay it out, what we're going to need.
Okay. Alfredo, coming back to you. Do you remember your trip to Wyandotte County Lake?
Yeah, I remember.
Do you remember the temperature when you were at Wyandotte County Lake?
No, not really.
You don't remember?
No.
Okay, I'm just saying. I'm going to say Irvin, right?
Yes.
All right. I told you I had a special question
for
you. When you came over and spoke to the NAACP, not the testing.
The first time.
All right. You made a statement about your feelings about science before you entered this program. You remember?
Yes.
You know where I'm going, right?
Yeah.
Will you please repeat that to the public? I want them to hear what you received out of this.
Okay. Well, I was able to meet Miss Laura, and I was able to meet everybody through a class I had. I was in last semester. I had biology, which I sadly don't have anymore, and it was a pretty difficult class. I like science, but it's just too much for me to like understand everything. But I really tried my hardest, and I was able to pass. And so one time when they came here to visit us, they took us on a trip to Wyandotte Lake. Yes, they took us to a trip there, and unlike J.C. Harmon, we couldn't get in the water. It was just too cold. And most of us are here are really outdoors. We like to go out and everything. But I really wanted to get in the water. I like swimming. That's all I'm going to say. But it was too cold. But we didn't do anything involving in the water, but we still did a lot of the experiments. I really liked everything there. I really liked science. I really liked how they taught us more things about like the macro vertebrates. About little insects, the water, how we can tell if it's bad or not, the phosphates and nitrogens. Those are the things I specialized in with my partner. And it was just really exciting. I really liked the whole thing.
All right. We're going to take a break. And in the process of taking this break, we're going to switch to our next two people. Thank you.
Thank you.
This week, almost 2 years after her husband passed away, radio host Diane Rehm reflects on faith, living alone, and her belief in the right to choose how we die.
He chose to have it end on a long glide by simply not taking in food or water or medication.
That's next time on Interfaith Voices.
Tuesday at noon.
The 2016 election cycle is in full swing, with a new administration set to take over the presidency of the United States. The Pacifica Radio Archives takes the time to rebroadcast their program covering Robert F. Kennedy's 1968 presidential campaign that began in mid-March of that same year, an unheard-of late start by today's standards. From the Vault, Wednesday morning at 5.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lazarowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Allie Kelly wants to use 16 miles of Interstate 85 between Atlanta, Georgia and Montgomery, Alabama to raise environmental awareness about roads. Kelly is executive director of The Ray, a project to make the Ray C. Anderson Memorial Highway the world's first sustainable road.
We're committed to driving the conversation about what we can do to innovate transportation, and there's a lot of opportunity because we haven't innovated transportation since we started building highways 60 plus years ago.
Building and maintaining roads is energy intensive, and cars and trucks emit carbon pollution. So Kelly and the RAISE trustees are turning the highway into a living lab that demonstrates how a road can have a net zero environmental impact. It may one day include noise-canceling solar panels, trees to capture carbon pollution, even embedded technology to help driverless cars navigate. And when it's resurfaced, they want to use recycled materials like tires and shingles. When added together,
we have the technology to build a carbon-negative road. That blows my mind. I hope it blows yours.
The Ray, which is still a work in progress, is a tribute to the late Ray Anderson, a pioneering business leader in sustainability and conservation. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
All right, this is Richard back again, Richard Mabian. You know, I hope you out there understand and appreciate what we're doing with these young people. Having a chance to come in and sit down and be heard, who knows how far. This program goes across the internet, so people could be listening to them anywhere in the world right now. And we do have listeners around the world, so it's amazing for them to be able to have this opportunity. And I'm just really honored to be in a position that we could offer it to them. Now, the reason that they're here is because we want to inform you as the public about this event that Laura spoke about a few minutes ago. So from this point on for the rest of the show, we're going to talk about that event as much as we can. So let's start just going around the circle. Tell me one thing about the activity that you want people to know.
Well, we're going to be we're going to have stations and talk about showing the tests that we ran while we were in this program and getting to understand what we did.
Okay. There. Say your name. Okay. That was Natalie. She forgot to say her name, but that's fine. You never know who's listening. Go ahead.
My name is Kevin, and, well, yeah, but like what Natalie said, we're going to be testing out the things that we've learned about water testing. For example, I'm doing conductivity, and...
Don't watch yourself, because I'll be asking you what that means. You know what that means? you know what that conductivity means?
Well, it's been a while since.
Yeah. Better make some cheat sheets. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, we'll be out there, you know, with informational booths, you know.
Okay.
Letting people know about, you know, water.
Hi, my name is Abraham, and... one of the things that we'll be doing there at the festival is we'll have refreshments.
Oh, refreshments.
And we'll have boat rides.
Oh.
If the weather's good.
Yeah. Oh, just fingers crossed that it won't rain.
I'm going to say that for the next group. Boat rides. Huh? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I want to say something else. We will be having kids activities, you know. Okay. We'll be having, a bunch of kids activities, you know. Okay. Everybody should go.
That's all right. I'll save it for the next group so they can be thinking about it while you're sitting back.
Yes, sir.
All right. Now, since you brought up the stations for testing, So if I'm hearing you right, people will be able to come out and actually get a chance to see what it is you all learned.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think that's real important out there on the air that's listening to this. I think that's something that you can bring your family out to see. This is very important because I think our young people need to see what our young people are doing. And if this is something that would inspire your child, even if it's an elementary age, I think this would be a great place for them to come and see what these young people will be doing. Okay, I'm going to switch them over and bring up my next group. What I'm going to do out there, just in case, I don't have that much time. I got about 7 minutes. But just in case one of you out there would want to ask the question of what you've been listening to, I'm going to open up the line just for these last 7 minutes. That's 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534. Okay. Now, they mentioned a couple of things there I wanted to get interested in. What was that one? The boat rides. Tell me about the boat rides. Yeah.
My name is Felicity, and we're going to have at least one boat out there that will be the people who come will not be rowing it. We'll have someone row for them. And
that was going to be my next question.
Yes. And so anyone who comes, you know, will be able to go on that. I think it's going to be
really
fun.
It's actually a boat, so there's no rowing at all.
Oh, yeah.
What do you mean a boat?
It's a motorboat.
It's a motorboat. A motorboat. I forgot.
Okay. All right. So what? I mean, is it going to go out and back? I mean, mm-hmm. Do you have a certain amount of minutes you could ride it in?
We're not quite sure.
Not sure yet on that? Okay. All right, here we go, Alfredo. You ready? Now, they mentioned something about kid ride, kid things. What kind of kid things are you going to have for the children? Oh, there he goes. There he goes. I thought I had an easy one. Well, we're going to change this. What would you like to tell us about that, Alfredo?
There's going to be a raffle on the barrel.
Okay.
Which
what kind of barrel?
It's a rain barrel. A group of us have got together in our school to work on this rain barrel, and we put a theme on it, which it was like a tiki.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wine barrel?
Yeah.
Y'all did that. You know what? Anybody else that comes up here, you come prepared to say something, because did you see what he did without me asking him a question? When I ask questions, I kind of put y'all on the spot, huh? You did good. I'm glad you did. I'm glad I had you do that. All right, give me a statement before you go. Something sharp. Okay.
Well, one thing that, another thing I'm really excited about at this event is that we're going to have live music. Oh. There's a folk band coming that's going to be playing almost the whole time. So when you come, you can listen to some, you know, nice local music, and that'll be really interesting.
You don't think they'll play no Prince, do you?
I don't think so. It's folk music. They might change something.
Might change something. Well, gang, all right, I'm going to leave you at that. Let me bring up my last one. I have one more,
last
right?
Two.
Two more. Oh, yeah, come on up. But these are two brainiacs anyhow, so I'm just going to let them have the show. Y'all got, we got until... Till 6:29. That gives you 3 minutes to fill my airway. And if I'm gonna see if you can do it without it going quiet in here. You can never let it go quiet when you own the air. So take it away.
All right. Well, hello. My name is Irvin. I'm back. One of the things that we forgot to say is where it's gonna be. It's gonna be at Cop Point Park.
Yes.
And it's gonna be well near the Cop Point. It's at the EPA building.
Yes.
It's in near Fairfax.
Right.
And if the weather is good, we will have the boat and the live music. But if it's bad, we're gonna have to like take it inside this building where everything will fit, but we're just not gonna be able to have the boat and the live music.
Okay.
Oh, it's my turn.
Yes, sir.
There's one thing we forgot to talk about. It was more about food. We're gonna have like food there and drinks.
Okay.
Tell them what kind of food.
I kind of forgot all the food.
Alfredo, Alfredo.
Okay. All I know there's gonna be food.
It's gonna be food.
Yeah, we're gonna have refreshments. So we're gonna have a lemonade and s'mores. So
s'mores.
If anybody likes s'mores, you can just come down and get some.
Yeah, okay. I'm glad you're saying that. Now, that spot that it's going to be in, gang, is Call Point. And I think that's really good to know. It's right there at the base of the off of 3rd Street there when you go down into Fairfax. If you get a chance to come out, there are going to be plenty of booths around, as they said already. I'm going to have the NAACP down there recruiting memberships. We're also going to have the Sierra Club down there, and there's other booths and other organizations in town that plan on being there. So is there any last thing anyone needs to say? Oh, the time.
Yep. Yes. That's what I was just about to say.
Yeah. The date and the time.
Well, it's going to be this Saturday. It's going to be from 1 to 4.
April the
30th
from 1 to 4. If anyone should have any questions, is there any way they can find out any information?
Well,
that sounds like a Laura question.
Yep.
You can go to kansasriver.org or you can call 913-963-3460 and talk to myself, Laura, and I'll tell you all about it.
Okay, before we go, there's another young lady in here who thought she was going to get out without being able to say anything. So now that everybody has talked, there's no way in the world I was going to let her be in here without introducing who I think is the most outstanding environmental STEM education teacher that I know, especially working with young people. So Kate Delahunt, will you please come up here and say a word? How dare you think you're going to sneak out of here?
Richard, I knew you were going to do this to me. My name is Kate Delahunt, and I am the education specialist for Friends of the Call. Laura and I go around and do water quality education programs at schools, mostly in Wyandotte and Johnson County. However, we have been doing some programs recently in Lawrence, Topeka, and Manhattan. So we sometimes do quite a bit of traveling. I have totally enjoyed working with all of these high school students. It's very amazing how they've changed over the last 6 months that we've been working with them. They've gotten to know each other. Many of these students had never met each other until they got into our program. And they literally have transformed themselves into a great family. And I have totally enjoyed working with them. I'm really looking forward to our event on Saturday. And most of all, I'm looking forward to our camp out on May 20th. Ooh. And we will be taking the students on a float trip on the Kansas River. So I had to get that in before yes. time was up.
Yes, I appreciate Thank that. You. Thank you. See, I knew you would do an outstanding job. I'm just going to say before I let them go that this has been a truly beautiful experience. I have been working with the youngsters. I've been out there while they've been doing their testing, and it's been a truly great experience. So thank you all for coming out, and we'll see you next Saturday. We'll see you this Saturday.
Thank you.
All righty. We're going to take a break.
Good job, everybody.
Hey, very good, yay.
This is Keith Washburn, and I know the radio star Khadija Hardaway. She's going to be on KKFI every Thursday morning talking about things nobody dares to talk about, racial issues. Yeah, and you can call in and join the conversation. Khadija and the White Guy is on every Thursday morning at 9 a.m. on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Veterans Voices Magazine, a writing publication for veterans, is starting a writing group in Kansas City. If you would like to learn how to compose and share your story, poem, photograph, or original artwork, then contact us at 816-701-6844 or see our website at veteransvoices.org. Writing from the soul, for the soul. This message, a public service of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Cue the creepy music. There's a villain on the move on this current cast. Imagine 40-pound fish invading a lake and stealing food from smaller species. It sounds like a horror movie, but Asian carp are real, and breeding populations are found in rivers near the Great Lakes. Christy Meyer of the Ohio Environmental Council says the situation's scary for her state, in part because Lake Erie is known for fishing.
Lake Erie in Ohio generates a $12.9 billion revenue for the state of Ohio in tourism and travel. Supports over 119,000 jobs. So all of that's at stake if Asian carp were to get into Lake Erie.
She says prevention means assessing and possibly cutting off entry points throughout the ecosystem. Current Cast is produced in partnership with Cornell's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future. Learn more online at currentcast.org.
All right, I'm back. Gang, that was quite an event. Being able to see them young people come in and react as responsibly as they did. That was one of the things that my NAACP members, they still talk about right now, is the professionalism that those youngsters showed when they was going from station to station. So if any of you have a chance to get out there Saturday, that would be a truly memorable experience. And if you, in fact, you do have some young children at home or grandchildren, it'd be great to bring them out and let them see. I mean, they have one station where they have all those vertebrates he was talking about in it, and I'm surprised none of them mentioned the leeches. That usually is the most exciting animal in there. It's when they got that leech running all around. Everybody's trying to catch it and put it in the little deal. All right, we're going to our second part of the show, and this is dueling with Don. Don, you want to introduce yourself to everybody, please?
Sure. Thanks, Richard, for having me today. My name is Dawn Bueller, and I am the Kansas Riverkeeper with Friends of the Caw. I took over for Laura Caldwell about a little over a year ago, and Laura had been the riverkeeper for 12 years. And she's trying to retire, but she's still our education director. So, and she and Kate are doing some really great work with the Kids About Water project.
Okay. Now, what happened, Mike and I were listing out some upcoming activities, I think it was, for, you know, because we read them on the air, and our lady, he reads them on the air, and we looked at the sheet, and man, we saw all those daggum trips, and I said, oh no, we need to get her in here. So if you're listening, what we're going to do, first of all, I'm going to have her talk about her experience now being with Riverkeepers. But what she's here for is to kind of give us a rundown on the type of recreational activities that they have planned this spring and summer on the river. First of all, how do you like your job?
I love my job. I love my job. I grew up on the banks of the Kansas River, actually out by DeSoto. Okay. I grew up on a 2,000-acre crop farm, and our family had river bottom land. And when I was a kid, there was only one boat ramp that I knew of on the Kansas River, and it was over by Eudora, actually on the Wakarusa. And my family, we went out a lot in our little John boat and would go fishing for catfish. And we spent time canoeing on the river and hanging out on sandbars. But the only way we got there was because our family had land. And back then, if you didn't have access, that was the only way you could get on. And Friends of the Caw came along and put, so far there's 19 boat ramps on the Kansas River.
19. Stretching from where to where?
From Junction City to Kansas City, Kansas. And there's two more scheduled to go in, two more at Maple Hill and at the Willard Bridge. And when those two go in, there will truly be a boat ramp every 10 miles on the Kansas River. And that's because of the hard work of Friends of the Caw. And they've done it in partnership with Kansas Department of Wildlife, Parks, and Tourism.
So when they put a ramp in, they have the equipment to come in and...
No. Frankly, one of our board members, Mike Caldwell, he works really hard to get it all donated.
Oh,
he'll get
okay.
donated all the equipment and the people, and then he started working on these with Wildlife, Parks, and Tourism, and now they partner with us on those. But Mike has put in all of these boat ramps, and he's done a great job, and he's got two more. And we're really excited to be able to say that the Kansas River will be accessible to all for the entire 173-mile-long river.
So when you have an event, what is generally the size of participants that you get?
Are you talking about fundraiser events or more like paddle events?
These summer events you got coming up.
If somebody... Oh, wow. We have a pretty good... record of filling them up. So we've got a couple of film festivals coming up, and those usually have a pretty good turnout. And then our paddle trips usually fill up all the way.
When you say fill up, I mean, give me a number.
Well, we own 23 boats, which means the maximum adults we can take out at one time is 46. But last fall, at the end of the fall, we did a paddle trip with Mission Community, and we had almost 100 people out there.
Oh, I said under it, going down the river at one time.
Yes, at one time.
That's got to be a sight to behold. What part of the river were you in?
That one was DeSoto to Cedar Creek, because that's the only section of the river that you can do that's only 5 miles. All the rest of them are around 10.
Okay.
So it was a shorter trip. It's a little easier with a big group. But most of our paddle trips are anywhere from 20 to 30 people. We try to keep them a little smaller just so that we can handle them.
Okay. DeSoto going which direction?
Downstream.
So you were headed toward 435?
We were, but we got off at Cedar Creek. If you were to get on at Cedar Creek, you would go to Edwardsville. then from Edwardsville to Turner, then from Turner to Call Point.
Wait a minute. So when you go to Edwardsville at past 435, that means you got to hit them little rapids that's down there. Y'all go across that stuff?
Are you talking about the Water One intake?
Yeah.
No, no. You have to port around that.
What do you mean port around that?
That means you get your boat out of your boat before the intake and carry it to around it and then put back in below it.
That's interesting. Because I was just imagining, of course, you know me and Water, we have a mutual agreement. They stay where they are, and they don't bother me, and I don't bother them.
It's not that far to port it, really.
It's not, but I mean, that's no problem. I can see that, but I was imagining going across those little rapids down there.
No. Okay. Those you can't go over those water intakes. Those are dangerous.
That's what you call those water intakes?
Mm-hmm.
So you see where I fall off I am. Okay, now I want to get into the planned activities.
Mm-hmm.
You got to list them. Just start right from the top. Tell us about it, what that involves.
Okay, our first one coming up is the festival that the kids have this weekend.
Okay.
That's coming up on Saturday from 1 to 4. I know that they talked about it, but they really have worked really hard for this project, and we're hoping to get a good community turnout to celebrate with them.
So now, how are you all involved with that? And what the kids are doing, you're not down there paddling nothing.
No, we won't be paddling, but I'll have a table down there for Friends of the Caw, and I'll be talking about what we have going on and some of our education and our outreach activities, and then Laura and Kate will be there working with the students, so it'll be a great day.
Yeah.
I do have several paddle trips coming up. We're doing one on Sunday from Manhattan to St. George.
This Sunday. So you work Saturday at the festival, and then Sunday you're going
a
paddle trip from where?
We're going from Manhattan to St. George.
How long
is it? It's about 10 miles.
Oh, that's not bad.
No. We're taking a group of K-State students out. And then the next week we have our really big event. It's called the Wild and Scenic Film Festival.
What is that?
That is a festival of inspirational environmental films. It's a film festival, truly. You come and you watch, 7 or 8 or 9 films. And some of them might be only, 6 minutes long, 20 minutes long.
Is there any paddling going on?
No. Well, in some of the films there are.
Okay. All right. So this is, you come and sit, we're outdoors?
No, it's in a theater.
Figured y'all's out there on the river, you'd be on a sandbar somewhere watching.
That's
theater.
Actually a good idea. Maybe that's something we can do in the future.
Yes.
We could bring a screen outdoors, like a drive-in theater. Right. We could have a drive-in sandbar.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what you were saying. That sounds good.
That's a great idea.
So where do these films come from? Are they from all over?
Right. The Wild and Scenic Film Festival has been doing these films for a long time, and they take it to, I think, 140 cities, and it's coming to Kansas. So on Thursday, May the 5th, we're having it at Cinetopia, which is in Overland Park. It's at 7 p.m.
Out there off of 95th Street?
Well, it's out off of 69 Highway and 135th.
Okay.
You know where the new REI store is? Right. It's out there. And then on Friday, May the 6th, this is the 7th year, we'll be having it at Liberty Hall in Lawrence.
Okay.
And that was our signature event. We've had it there 7 years. This is only our second year in Overland Park. And we have tickets on sale on our website, kansasriver.org. All proceeds benefit the Kansas River and Friends of the Caw.
Okay.
So,
very good.
Yeah,
very good.
That's a big event for us. Then we take out a lot of students. Classes on these educational paddle trips. So the way they're designed is that we take them out, we provide the boat, the paddle, the life jacket, and we have a sandbar roast, and we stop with the kids on a sandbar, and we do an educational piece. We call it the sandbar education. So I'll get up and talk about the river, tell them how long it is, The watershed is 53,000 square miles. It extends into Nebraska and Colorado. And, you know, when you think about where the rain falls and then it actually winds up in the Kansas River, we talk about all those things. And then we have what we call paddle assistants, which are people who have paddled all over the world, and they volunteer with us.
Yeah.
And so a lot of them know a lot about the environment. So they'll get up and talk about maybe the wildlife or the eagles nesting. There are 25 nesting eagles now on the Kansas River. Or they'll talk about the river channel and how to read it. That, you know, there's an art to reading a river channel.
I have to ask a question about the eagles. Do they ever bother people?
Not that I know of.
That didn't help none at all. No.
We paddled last week with Haskell University out of Lawrence. We took a group of students who were in aquatic biology class, and we had an eagle fly over us two or three times,
no,
and it was taking nesting material back to its nest, and it's quite beautiful.
I mean, I love the sound of it.
They are beautiful. Lots of blue heron on the Kansas River, a lot of ducks, teal.
See those. What's a
lots
blue,
of wildlife.
What's a blue heron?
It's a long-legged looking bird.
Okay.
And when he takes off flight, he's got really a big wingspan, and he looks kind of a bluish-gray color, and he hangs around waterways. You'll find him at the outflows of the reservoirs. I think he tries to catch fish there.
Okay.
So.
Very interesting. I mean, I really hadn't thought that much about it as far as the wildlife being out there on the river. Got any bears out there?
No, but you do see beaver and snakes.
Oh,
and
I knew he was going to see snakes.
Turtles.
Turtles, that's cool. Do you get any big turtles? Or
Sometimes? Yeah.
Beavers.
Yeah, you'll see those critters once in a while. Usually they're pretty fast and elusive, so you hear them splash more than you
actually see them. Yeah,
right. We do have that I think Kate mentioned it, we have a paddle trip that we're doing, I think it's May 21st, where we're taking the students that you met today, we're taking them on a paddle trip.
Yeah, I know. I saw that. I don't know if the people out here realize I am a part of this grant that they operate. No.
And you're coming with us,
I
right?
I was good to go till they got out to them last two.
You're going to be in a canoe, right, Richard? Canoe.
Yeah, I'm going to be the one. I'll take pictures from the bridge. Hey, I haven't got it there yet, but I do know that trip is planned. I want to be there. It's going to be the kids. Have all of them been out before? Do you know?
Some of them, I think, have been through our program.
Right.
We also do some paddling experiences throughout the summer, and they may have done one of our paddling experiences where we take kids out and let them learn how to use a canoe or a kayak.
I don't want you to think.
Usually we do it at Wyandotte County Lake.
I don't want you to think I've never been in a boat with a paddle. I have. I was even responsible for youth back in my social service days, being out in the river with a boat and paddling. I never really could get the paddling down, but I've been there. I don't you think I haven't. So, you go all the way through. I noticed on the sheet you had them listed as spring, summer, right? So we pretty much through. Are we through spring?
Oh, gosh, no. I've got events all the way through right now through November.
Through November. Do you do things on holidays like 4th of July?
We don't have anything scheduled on the 4th of July. We do have a community float with Eudora scheduled on Memorial Day weekend.
Okay.
So that's one. And then sometimes, you know, a group will ask us to schedule one like on Labor Day weekend. But right now I don't have anything over the holiday.
If a group, pray tell, the NAACP would say, Richard, we want to take a float trip. That's possible?
Yes, it is.
I could call you and say, can you set us up for such and such a day? And,
absolutely.
Y'all heard that out there, didn't you?
Yep.
So that
you get
would be
to
cool.
choose whether you want to do 5 miles or 10.
Oh, wow.
It's a difference of 4 hours or six.
Have a cookout?
Yes, have a cookout. Well, we dig a hole in the sand, and you take driftwood,
and build a bonfire.
Okay.
And you have your choice. You can have roasted hot dogs, or you can have s'mores, or we can do a healthier option, if whatever the group wants.
So now you don't have any overnight trips, do you?
We don't typically do overnight trips, but a lot of our members do overnight. Yeah, we just don't do them sponsored.
On the Kansas River?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And they pull off on one of them sandbars and
throw
up a tent. And
yep. There are two. There's actually three things you need to check if you want to camp on the Kansas River. Number one is you check the weather, because this is Kansas after all.
Yes.
Number two is you check the water levels and what the reservoirs are releasing. Because, for example, today at DeSoto, the river is around 3,000 cubic feet per second. But if you look on the gauges for the U.S. Geological Survey, you'll find that up around Manhattan, there's about 7 or 8,000 CFS that's coming down the river. So the river's getting ready to rise because we had all that rain. So you have to watch for that.
We got 1 minute before we have to go off. But I want you to tell folks how they can, if they want any information, how they can get in touch with you.
Absolutely.
And find out what's going on.
They can go to our website, kansasriver.org. We are also on Facebook and Twitter under Friends of the Call. The phone number for the organization is 785-312-7200. My name is Dawn Bueller, and my email is riverkeeper@kansasriver.org.
Repeat that number one more time.
785-312-7200.
All right, Dawn, I really appreciate you coming
in. Thank you, Richard.
We'll have to have you back. I might want to have you come back at the end of the summer and tell us some of the exciting experiences.
I would love to.
Especially the one that you had to dig out of the water when he fell over into it.
And I will see you on the river.
On the river.
You
will see me on the river. All right, gang. In, it's been a good show, and I'll see you on the next trip. Next week, I think.
The Carbon Justice Conference will join academics, professionals, and students in an effort to ensure social justice while transitioning to low carbon usage practices. The symposium will engage this intersection and explore how local energy transitions can be leveraged to advance local social justice objectives that prioritize the needs and rights of traditionally disadvantaged groups. Asking, what does social justice look like in the context of a low carbon energy transition? And what legal, political, or structural obstacles complicate social justice considerations in this context? This is a free event that will be held from 9 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. on Thursday, April 28th, at the University of Kansas Commons, Spooner Hall, 1340 Jayhawks Boulevard. For more information and to register, visit carbonjusticecampus.com. Celebrate National Drinking Water Week with Water One in the city of Olathe while supporting Water for People, a nonprofit that works to bring clean, safe drinking water to communities in other countries who need it most. The 5K running course will go from the Water One Tower, Water Tower to the city of Olathe Water Tower. The event includes individual and team registration as well as a kids' fun run. Visit tower2tower5k.org. for more information on this event. And the 15th annual Prairie Village Earth Fair will feature many exhibits, vendors, and activities to inspire earth action, including a garage sale, used book sale, wildlife, environmental products, service, and games, plants from local farms and nurseries, art activities, and much other things like food trucks and bicycle safety checks, etc. This free event will be held Saturday, April 30th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Shawnee Mission East Main Gymnasium, which is at 7500 Mission Road. You can find more information by visiting earth-fair.org. And I'm going to ask Richard to repeat the details for the event that's this weekend. Okay.
Okay, that's April the 30th from 1 to 4 at Call Point.
Pop up corals and heavy water. That and other news for the week ending April 24th, 2016.
I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin. And it's This Week in Water.
Last Sunday and Monday, up to 20 inches of rain fell in parts of Houston, Texas.
At least 8 people died in their cars, and many had to be rescued. Many people were evacuated, and in addition, alligators, snakes, and other wildlife were in the water looking for higher ground.
Damage estimates go as high as nearly $2 billion.
People in Houston are learning that development in one part of the metro area can affect other parts of town.
One of the major problems, according to Samuel Brody, a professor at Texas A&M, is pavement. It doesn't absorb water.
He told CNBC that every square meter of pavement in Houston translates into about $4,000 of extra flood damage.
Growth and development have covered up many wetland areas that would have acted as natural ponds. The heavy rains have to find somewhere to go, and in this case, it was into people's living rooms.
The state climatologist told the Houston Chronicle that the city will see storms like this one again, and that he expects an increase in rainfall of up to 7% for each degree of global warming.
The Obama administration announced last week that it is buying water from a country you would not expect.
The U.S. will pay Iran about $8.5 million for 32 metric tons of heavy water. It's part of the deal under which Iran agreed to limit its atomic program in exchange for relief from sanctions.
Heavy water is not radioactive, but it can be used for research and medical applications such as MRIs.
The downside is that it can also be used to convert uranium into plutonium for use in nuclear weapons.
The U.S. has not produced heavy water since 1981. Currently, Canada and India are the U.S. suppliers.
The process to create heavy water is in itself water-intensive.
It takes nearly 350,000 pounds of what's called feed water to make 1 pound of heavy water. So the Department of Energy has been eyeing the Iranian source for some time.
Republicans lambasted the deal, saying it would give Iran's radical regime more cash.
Speaking of atomic energy, China is planning to build a fleet of floating nuclear power plants. The country wants to provide power to controversial man-made islands it created in the South China Sea.
China wouldn't be the first country to develop civilian floating reactors. The U.S. built one on a ship in the 1960s to provide electricity to the Panama Canal Zone.
While the concept of floating nuclear power plants is not new, their use in the South China Sea is worrisome, as the area is prone to typhoons, and the very existence of the islands is making the region tense.
Ever since awareness was raised about lead in the Flint water system, people in other places have been asking about their own local pipes.
The EPA has issued a call to water utilities across the country to post information online about the number and locations of risky lead pipes.
But the USA Today reports that there's been resistance in about 12 states to disclosing that information.
For example, South Dakota's representative told the EPA that they do not have the information readily available and don't intend to spend valuable staff resources sifting through the microfilm to get it.
Other states expressed similar concerns, and some said that privacy matters made them hesitant to post locations of lead pipes.
But a few states, like Mississippi and Ohio, are requiring the information to be disclosed by set dates. And in Boston and Cincinnati, the online inventory is already available.
When oceanographer Patricia Yeager went to study the Amazon River in Brazil, she got more than she expected.
Yeager and a team of researchers were looking to understand how the ocean absorbs carbon dioxide. But what they got instead was a discovery of a lifetime, a 600-mile coral reef that wasn't supposed to be there.
Coral reefs thrive in clear, salty, sunlit waters along tropical shelves, not in murky plumes where rivers wash piles of sediment to the sea.
But there it was. Compared to many other reefs, the scientists say this one is relatively impoverished. Despite that, they found over 60 species of sponges, 73 species of fish, spiny lobsters, and other reef life.
The discovery can help researchers better understand how reefs tolerate harsh conditions, conditions that are on the rise worldwide because of global warming. The news comes at a time when the Great Barrier Reef in Australia is experiencing the worst mass coral bleaching event in its history.
As exciting as the discovery is, the corals are said to be in grave danger. The Brazilian government has sold 80 blocks for oil exploration right on top of the reef.
And finally, if you're like us, you keep a glass of cold, delicious water on your nightstand. But when you wake up in the morning and take a swig, it tastes a bit meh. But why?
SciShow, the YouTube channel that explains stuff, posted the following possible explanations last week.
Possible reason number one, many water providers add compounds containing chlorine to destroy bacteria and viruses.
Overnight, as water sits out in the open air, the chlorine evaporates. Because we're used to drinking water with a hint of chlorine, after sitting for a while, it doesn't taste the same.
Possible reason number two, when CO2 from surrounding air makes its way into our water, it blends with H2O molecules to form carbonic acid. This makes the water more acidic and therefore less refreshing.
Possible reason number three, temperature. Cold temperatures can suppress your sense of taste, so when you drink cold water, you aren't always tasting its bouquet, if you will.
And warm water has faster moving molecules that can amplify taste and can reveal the water for how it really seems, stale.
But we know you're concerned with the bottom line. Is your glass of water safe despite all this midnight alchemy?
Totally. Unless, of course, a spider crawled in it, in which case, let's just say you got some extra protein in your diet. This Week in Water is sponsored by the American Water Works Association. Unite the world of water at AWWA's ACE 16 in Chicago, June 19th through 22nd. Learn more at awwa.org/ACE16.